providing quality, realistic preparedness supplies at an affordable price. Go online, stop by, or call 303-781-0343. Ferris Survival. The Beth Messiah Congregation invites you to come and experience a Messianic Roots, biblically-based congregational fellowship as we observe God's Shabbat in Messiah Yeshua. Praise and worship services begin at 10:30 a.m., followed by an Oneg Shabbat meal, Midrash, and fellowship. Beth Messiah Congregation is located at 8333 Acoma Way in North Denver. You can find out more information by calling 1-800-205-6245. Everyone's welcome, so join us this Shabbat. And Shabbat Shalom, good Sabbath. CINN stations in Alt salutes our troops. Whether you're for the war or against it, they're still there. These men and women deserve more than our support. They deserve the comfort of home. Send a military care package today. Just type military care package into a search engine. Point and click. Let's show our troops we care. This message from CINN stations in Alt, wishing Godspeed to our fighting men and women and thanking them for their triumphs and their sacrifices.
Good morning. This is Joel Skousen standing in for Dr. Stanley Monteith for Radio Liberty. Today we're going to talk about or give you a little preview of my World Affairs Brief coming out today. We'll first talk about Libya, the no-fly zone, turning into an all-out attack on Libya. That seems to be the usual pattern for U.S. globalist leaders, whether Republican or Democrat. Humanitarian intervention in Libya was just a pretext for all-out war and was pre-planned even before the non-spontaneous revolt by opposition leaders. Muammar Gaddafi's air defense sites and air bases have all been destroyed by cruise missiles, and now the U.S. and its allies are having trouble finding excuses to continue the attack under the pretext of a no-fly zone. Anything that moves on the ground militarily is now a new and eager target, as is Gaddafi's bunker complex in Tripoli. But air attacks alone aren't going to remove Gaddafi, in my opinion, who is determined to turn this into a long and protracted conflict. At some point, the U.S. is going to have to justify an invasion, either directly or by surrogates, and that won't be easy to do, given the mounting opposition to this trumped-up and unconstitutional war. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates is the man on the hot seat, and he isn't doing a very good job, in my opinion, convincing the public that this is just a minor police action, as he tried to do in the beginning. He admitted midweek that there is no timeline for the end of the U.S.-led assault on Libya, as international opposition to the invasion continues to grow. In other words, the U.S. is staying in the fight, even as they claim they want NATO to take over, for as long as it takes to accomplish globalist objectives. There is also increasing evidence that this was planned and provoked well in advance, just like the invasion of Afghanistan using the 9/11 attacks as a pretext. The Afghanistan attack clearly was planned almost 6 months in advance of 9/11. Russia Today, RT Television, happened to be filming Secretary Gates walking along with General Petraeus after he descended from a very, very large government-owned aircraft in Afghanistan. Petraeus looked at the aircraft because normally Gates flies in a smaller Pentagon aircraft. Petraeus asked authentically if that means he was going to attack Libya. "Yeah, exactly," said Gates, who is now claiming that he was being sarcastic. Yet during a prior visit to Cairo, Bob Gates said no one was in a position to predict what would happen in Libya. Well, obviously he knew what was going to happen. Michael Chusadovsky points out that the revolt was provoked by Western-backed opposition. He says the entire Libyan rebel movement has been backed by the U.S. and the U.K., CIA and MI6, for nearly 3 years. The initial calls for Libyan Day of Rage came not from the streets of Benghazi, but from the London-based National Conference of Libyan Opposition. NCLO leader Ibrahim Saad was literally sitting in front of the White House giving an interview to the Western media in the opening stages of the Libyan unrest, talking about the West's desire to military intervene with a no-fly zone. All of that was, of course, pre-planned. The Wall Street Journal noted that the presence of Egyptian mercenaries, the latest Egyptian operation to arm Libyan rebels, had started several days ago and is ongoing, and that was before the Saturday beginning of the no-fly zone. Stratfor.com, who has ties to the CIA, reported that While all of this was going on, and before final decisions were made, special operations forces were inserted into Libya on two missions. First, to make contact with insurgent forces to prepare them for coming events, create channels of communication on logistics, and create a post-war political framework. The second purpose was to identify targets for attack and conduct reconnaissance of those targets that provided as up-to-date information as possible. This, combined with air and space reconnaissance, which means satellite, served as the foundation of the war. We know British SAS operators were in Libya as well, and suspect other countries' special operations forces and intelligence services were also operating there. That's quite a revelation. Former NATO Commander General Wesley Clark inferred in an interview this week that the bombing of Libya has been on the drawing board of the Pentagon for several years. A comment by Western officials, or a Western official at the NATO negotiations, which he made to the Financial Times, added fuel to the provocation fire when he admitted during the wrangling in NATO over whether or not any of them could get their act together and assume command of the U.S. operation that, quote, NATO countries have been working for weeks to have the alliance assume effective command of the mission. So you see, all of this was really planned in advance. Given that the mission is only a week old, this means, of course, that they knew about all of this. This was not spontaneous. The source to the Times also added, as we got closer and closer to closing the deal at NATO, France suddenly blocked everything, which confused us at first. But then it became clear why he was doing it. President Nicolas Sarkozy wanted to announce strikes just as he was walking out of his meeting in Paris where he could lead the show. Now, this is typical of European infighting. Even though the U.S. has predictable globalist leaders in every major government in Europe, they each are jockeying for recognition and power with the EU and keep stabbing each other in the back. French officials denied acting alone in Saturday's attack, saying the plan has always been for French fighters to kick off the operation, followed by British and American missile attacks, French diplomats said. Well, this quote strongly implies a closed-door agreement between the U.S., Britain, and France, and probably Italy, that the rest of the EU is supposed to go along with. That didn't happen, of course. While the U.S. is still desperate for someone else to front for the war, NATO completely failed this week to agree on who should have command. Turkey's the main stickler, having been kept out of the initial agreement negotiations between the U.S., Britain, and France that had given France the major glory role. After ambassadors of the 28 nations ended a third day of wrangling in Brussels, without a deal, one senior diplomat said no decision on anything. Turkey and Muslim allies said it did not want NATO to take responsibility for offensive operations that could cause civilian casualties or be in charge of enforcing a UN-mandated no-fly zone while coalition aircraft were simultaneously bombing Libyan forces. Now, that's understandable for the one lone Muslim nation in NATO, but the real reasons have to do with Turkey wanting to exercise her veto for having been slighted on this and other issues, including failure of the EU to allow her to join the economic union in addition to NATO. Turkey, a NATO member that has expressed reservations about the military intervention, also blocked the move to give the alliance command and control during a Sunday night meeting. Now, that's almost a week ago now. The Turkish government was upset that its representatives had not been invited to Paris for a summit on the crisis. This is this kind of exclusionary feeling that members of NATO get, that it seems to be run by the U.S., France, Britain, and Italy. We'll be back right after the break.
Just a good old boy.
Hi, I'm Eric Cederstrom. For over a decade, I've been the CEO, shipping clerk, and janitor of the Patriot Trading Group. And in that time, I've made friends with tens of thousands of like-minded individuals all over this country, most like me, trying to raise a family, run a business, and make sense out of a world gone mad. I'm proud of the fact that through stock bubbles, housing bubbles, and financial chaos, our customers are prospering and doing very well. By keeping our prices fair and our service fast, we find that 80% of our customers not only reorder, but they tell their friends. Don't be fooled by hype and high pressure. Do business with a company you can trust. Call the Patriot Trading Group at 1-800-951-0592 or check out our website at allamericangold.com. You'll be treated with honesty and respect. You have my word on it. I'm Eric Cederstrom, CEO, shipping clerk, and janitor.
Making your way, the only way they know how.
We're talking today with Tom Phillips, founder of The Green Herb. Tom, what makes The Green Herb different?
First is our health analysis. I know of no other company that will take the time necessary to suggest an in-depth herbal program especially for you. And we do it at no charge or obligation. Also, we manufacture all of our products right in the Wheat Ridge facilities. This way we can assure you that you're getting the highest quality products available. Last is our guarantee. If you don't think our products are the finest, most potent herbal products available, just return the bottle and we'll exchange it or refund your purchase price. We can do the analysis at The Green Herb, over the phone, or online at www.thegreenherb.com. Call today and set an appointment for your free health profile at 888-765-HERB. That's 888-765-4372. Or come by our store on the north side of I-70 Frontage Road, 1 mile west of Kipling.
And this is Joel Skousen standing in for Stanley Monteith. Good to be with you. In desperation after Wednesday's failures, the French proposed a new political committee to oversee operations, supposedly giving no one the limelight as leader, but that didn't fly either, especially after the French wanted to have a predominant predominance of members from France and Britain, kind of a new Anglo-French alliance as they had in World War II. Sarkozy is posturing for the limelight as he is in trouble for a re-election. In fact, almost every European leader is under increasing threat of disapproval at home over the Libyan affair and needs to carve out some political capital from it if they're going to foot the cost and the blame in the future. Failing to come to an agreement, Germany pulled out the largest share of its military equipment, two frigates and an AWACS surveillance aircraft, but the U.S. is luring them back with financial bribes as well. The temporary withdrawal was mainly for show, since the Americans don't trust any but themselves for command and control. The feint of a withdrawal was a backhanded way of telling the Americans how tired the Europeans are of playing second fiddle and covering for U.S. black operations. The Italians, meanwhile, who've had the lion's share of cheap oil from Libya, which is their former colony, accused the French of backing the NATO agreement only with backdoor promises of more oil from Libya after it's all over. Finally, on Thursday, NATO finally had paid off enough of the opposition states to forge an agreement. However, the show of disunity mars its significance. There was also a verbal agreement between the U.S. and Britain over whether or not Gaddafi was a legitimate target for assassination. Canada's Prime Minister Harper already let the cat out of the bag that Gaddafi's elimination was what the U.S. was shooting for. U.K. government officials were mincing words about killing the Libyan leader, but only if it would prevent civilian deaths as laid out in the UN resolution. And how about the deaths caused by U.S. bombing? A funeral was held Thursday for civilian victims, but the U.S. denied that they did it, as usual. The Russians and Chinese play both sides as usual. Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin on Monday lashed out at the steady trend of U.S. military intervention around the world, accusing Washington of acting without conscience or logic. And of course, my long-term analysis is that the U.S., one of the major globalist reasons for continued intervention around the world, especially these type, where they don't really accomplish anything like in Afghanistan or Iraq, there is no true democracy, and that's not the reason for going in. It is to increase the image of the U.S. as the bully of the world. And so Russia is picking up on this and using it to their advantage, future advantage of a justification for going to war with the West. And yet, Russia's being hypocritical. It didn't use its veto because it wanted to eavesdrop on U.S. and NATO military operations. But the Ruskies failed to get any data on the effectiveness of the Russian-supplied anti-aircraft missiles sold to Libya. They were all destroyed by cruise missiles before they could be launched, so didn't have any confrontation there. So here's my question. Is this another no-win war? Probably not, even though several U.K. ministers say the war could last 30 years. Libya does not have the terrain that lends itself to a long guerrilla war like Afghanistan or Vietnam. They aren't self-sufficient in agriculture, and right now they have few sources of income, with oil production and exportation shut down. If the U.S. has to start attacking civilian cities, so much for their humanitarian concerns, they will do so in order to get this over with quickly. Not because they think what they did was wrong in provoking this war, but because the current Democratic administration is losing credibility fast with its core constituency on the left, who were promised to change from the aggressive, interventionist Bush-era policies that brought down the Republicans. They know the American people is getting weary of the expenses of these wars. For various reasons, I'm suspicious that the U.S. may be instigating this attack on Libya for reasons other than allowing a radical Islamic state to emerge. That hasn't panned out yet in Egypt either, now that the military is in charge, and they aren't giving the Muslim Brotherhood the time of day. That, of course, could still happen both in Egypt and Libya. We know very little about who the U.S. is backing in the opposition ranks. All the talk about Al-Qaeda is just so much propaganda. Al-Qaeda at the top is a U.S. and British creation, so globalists can jerk the chain of anti-terrorism anytime they want to justify a new intervention. Ironically, when Gaddafi cries that he's fighting Al-Qaeda, no one gives him any credence. But when the Western press blames something on Al-Qaeda, the dumbed-down public believes them. What I'm beginning to suspect is that U.S. African Command running this show is that the U.S. is about to open another anti-terror and anti-dictator front in Africa, as well as the Middle East, and use the Libyan military occupation as a jumping-off base to start dictating to other countries in Africa. The Sudan, just south of Libya, is ripe for intervention. And then there's Somalia. This might be just the reason that the U.S. has been playing soft with the pirates and not invading their safe havens in Somalia. You know, they just work right out of these ports, and the U.S. says we have to maintain Somalia's sovereignty, even though Somalis won't interdict and stop these pirates. And yet, obviously, they're not respecting Libya's sovereignty in these regards. I mean, this is a double standard. And it may well be that they're allowing this to happen, this piracy to continue to go forth relatively unchecked, so they'll have an excuse to invade sometime. This might be the time for them to pull that excuse out of the hat. In short, there's no shortage of countries in Africa with dictators that the globalists can use as an excuse for intervention. Meanwhile, the rest of the Middle East is still aflame. Protesters were shot dead in Syria, and Yemen is falling to political unrest. Bahrain has Saudi troops inside the country, and I wouldn't be surprised if the insurrection starts again in the Saudi kingdom itself after having fizzled the first time. The day of rage in Saudi Arabia didn't amount to much. President Assad made a public statement hinting at giving Syrians greater freedom to appease the public outcry after his forces killed 37 protesters. It's not about to abate soon because these things are being provoked by Western intelligence forces. Neoconservative foreign policy still reigns in the U.S. The long-term implications of more foreign intervention is not good. Philip Giraldi expressed the sense of those who are tired of U.S. hegemony when he said, "One of the enduring mysteries is why conservative foreign policy continues to dominate the Republican Party and also large parts of the Democratic Party, even though that policy has been disastrous to the U.S. He says no one, not even the Secretary of Defense, is willing to call the two land wars currently underway in Asia successful. But there are others, I might add, who do claim success. And the hemorrhage of more than $12 billion a month to support these conflicts is nothing whatsoever, does nothing whatsoever for a struggling U.S. economy unless one is a defense contractor. Yet the view that the United States must use its waning power to remake much of the world prevails. The policy is in some circles underwritten by the myth that the United States, he says, is a special nation that makes it somehow immune to the history of the decline and fall of empires." What he's saying is very true. Few Americans believe the U.S. could ever fall. It can and it will if our globalist leaders continue down this path. But this, in fact, is just what they are intending: to foment a huge backlash to U.S. bullying that will induce a nuclear war someday attacking America, giving them, our leaders, the excuse to force us into a new world order for protection and the prosecution of another war to end all wars, of course, which will not end all wars. Well, there's a tepid Republican response. While I find it refreshing that someone other than just Ron Paul is protesting that Obama bypassed Congress and going to war, Republican opposition is tepid and not intended to stop this continuing intervention. The key unconstitutional aspects are not being prosecuted, even though they're being mentioned. House Speaker John Boehner, Republican of Ohio, is making the news with his critique of the attack on Libya, but he is only asking questions that can easily be answered with diplomatic double talk. After all, this is the same White House he is addressing that told Democratic and Republican congressional aides on Tuesday that the U.S. is, quote, not at war with Libya. Incredible. The media claims Boehner sent Obama a scathing letter that, quote, demands answers to the run-up to the engagement in the region and hits the White House for first consulting the United Nations and Arab League, but not Congress. All true. But that evades the issue. If Boehner is only demanding that Congress be consulted, he doesn't understand the Constitution, which gives Congress the exclusive power to wage war. Perhaps that is why the White House won't admit this is a war. According to Politico.com, Boehner wrote in the letter that he is troubled that the United States military has been engaged in the attacks on Libya without clearly defining what the mission is and what America's role in achieving the goal. Only troubled, I ask. And how hard is it for the State Department to come forward with some esoteric goals to answer his critique, even if they are lies? Once you have answers, now what are you going to say? Well, okay, you answered my questions. Well, the questions touch on the UN resolution, among other things. Boehner notes that the U.S. has said Colonel Muammar Gaddafi should step down, but the resolution does not indicate a similar goal. Given that, Boehner asked if it would be acceptable for Gaddafi to stay in power, how he'd be removed from power, and why the U.S. would commit American forces to enforce a U.N. resolution that is inconsistent with our stated goals and national interest. Well, the speaker asks which nations are in the lead and if there are clear lines of authority and responsibility, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. These are all nice questions, but equally simple to defer and evade by saying we won't know until we get further down the road. Also, he wants the administration's plans to engage with opposition forces, also inquiring by, quote, what standards must a new regime meet to be recognized by the U.S. government? Well, the budget-slashing Republican leader also wants to know the cost of the mission and if the administration will seek a supplemental funding measure for military actions. Boehner knows quite well that there are no answers to these questions. They all depend on future events unknown. Instead of asking rhetorical questions, he ought to say, stop, in the name of the law, meaning the Constitution. Congress will set the parameters and tell you if and when you can go to war. And the cost is piling up. The Pentagon had to request emergency funding from Congress to pay for it the first day of the operation, Odyssey Dawn. It cost about $100 million for the U.S. just in missiles alone. So if the Republican-controlled Congress and Representative Boehner objects to not being consulted, why do they agree to pay? You see, this is just a front of an opposition, the hardcore opposition from Senator Rand Paul and his father, Congressman Ron Paul, are once again going to force Congress to address a declaration of war. Both will introduce into their respective chambers a declaration of war on Libya, which they do not intend to support, of course. But this follows after what Ron Paul did during the Iraq War in an attempt to force Congress to go on record with proper justification, something that he knew they wouldn't do. The earlier attempt by Ron Paul elicited the infamous retort by House Speaker Henry Hyde, a Republican, by the way, that, quote, these are things in the Constitution that have been overtaken by events, by time. Declaration of war is one of them. There are things that are no longer relevant to a modern society. Why declare war if you don't have to? We are saying to the president, use your judgment. So to demand that we declare war is to strengthen something to death. You've got a hammerlock on this situation, and it's not called for, inappropriate, anachronistic. It isn't done anymore. So not only has Congress informally repudiated its war powers in Ron Paul's day, but it is now reluctant to even bring it up. The only thing Paul's protesting committee did was add to our proofs of conspiracy. Hyde's remarks were edited out of the videotape and the audio tape of the hearings by two separate entities, one private, C-SPAN, and the other public, the Congressional Recording Service. So somebody got to both of them to protect Hyde from having publicly denigrated the Constitution and his oath of office to it. That is a conspiracy. What it adds up to is this. The president skipped town for a tour of South America so he couldn't be called before Congress to justify his actions. It was doubtful his hiding was necessary, however. As a defense, he could very well have said that the White House did, in fact, send a team to brief a select few in Congress, which is true. But they were sworn to secrecy in an intelligence briefing, which hardly constitutes constitutional approval by Congress to declare war. The more volatile issue that the White House is desperate to avoid is the resurrection of the video of 2007. Get this, when Senator Joe Biden was pressed to repeat his position that then-President George Bush should be impeached because he went to war without a declaration of war. Not only did he confirm that this was his position, he told Matthews, "I was the head of the Judiciary Committee. For 7 years, I taught constitutional law. The president has no constitutional authority to take this country to war." And yet he's now the vice president and not a peep out of him about Barack Obama.
The Beth Messiah Congregation invites you to come and experience a Messianic Roots biblically-based congregational fellowship as we observe God's Shabbat in Messiah Yeshua. Praise and worship services begin at 10:30 a.m., followed by an Oneg Shabbat meal, Midrash, and fellowship. Beth Messiah Congregation is located at 8333 Acoma Way in North Denver. You can find out more information by calling 1-800-205-6245. Everyone's welcome, so join us this Shabbat. And Shabbat Shalom. Good Sabbath.
An emergency preparedness plan for your home, car, school, and office is a must. Knowing how to store water safely, survive extreme temperature changes, provide reliable shelter, first aid, and sanitation is critical. Knowing where to get the best lights, radios, and other supplies is easy. Ferris Survival, located at 3366 South Broadway, is a professional, reputable, full-service business providing realistic preparedness supplies at affordable prices. Stop by, go online, or call 303-781-0343, 866-781-0343.
We're talking today with Tom Phillips, founder of The Green Herb. Tom, what makes The Green Herb different?
First is our health analysis. I know of no other company that will take the time necessary to suggest an in-depth herbal program especially for you. And we do it at no charge or obligation. Also, we manufacture all of our products right in the Wheat Ridge facilities. This way we can assure you that you're getting the highest quality product available. Last is our guarantee. If you don't think our products are the finest, most potent herbal products available, just return the bottle and we'll exchange it or refund your purchase price. We can do the analysis at The Green Herb, over the phone, or online at www.thegreenherb.com. Call today and set an appointment for your free health profile at 888-765-HERB. That's 888-765-4372. Or come by our store on the north side of I-70 Frontage Road, 1 mile west of Kipling.
Article 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall be issued but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the places to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Worship and Warfare, Holy Places and In His Hands. Three praise and worship CDs now available through Voice of Many Waters Ministry. Call 1-800-205-6245 or check it out on the web, www.voiceofmanywaters.org. Each CD is $15 plus $3.50 shipping and handling. Call 1-800-205-6245 or www.voiceofmanywaters.org.
And this is Joel Skousen, editor of World Affairs Brief, standing in for Stan Monteith. And we're talking about Libya. We're talking about the supreme hypocrisy of Senator Joe Biden, or Vice President Joe Biden, who in 2007 told Chris Matthews on television, and you can see this video on YouTube, that emphatically that the President Bush ought to be impeached because he says the President has no constitutional authority to take this country to war against another country without the approval of Congress. And yet, where is Joe Biden now? Why, he's the vice president to Barack Obama, who just went to war without the approval of Congress and without a whimper of protest from Biden. In 2007, Biden had merely jumped on the bandwagon attacking Bush for reasons of political expediency, but he's now quite silent. Worse, there's only a handful of Republican statesmen who countenance a proposal to impeach the president. There would be an immediate retort, it just isn't done anymore. Sad but true. The president did tell Congress he was engaging in military actions, and someone should at least hold Obama accountable for the soon-to-be-clear lies that he told to Congress. In his statement to Congress, he said, on March 19th, at my direction, not Congress, you notice, he said, at my direction, U.S. military forces commenced operations to assist an international effort to authorized by the U.N. Security Council and undertaken with the support of European allies and Arab partners to prevent a humanitarian crisis and address the threat posed to international peace and security by the crisis in Libya. Now, we know humanitarian pretense was a ruse. If the U.S. were serious, they would have long ago invaded Zimbabwe, where thousands have been killed and tortured under this communist regime of terror and land confiscation. North Korea is also a much bigger threat than Iran or Libya, and yet we give them guarantees against any military intervention and promises not to seek regime change. The Sudan and Somalis have as much blood on their hands, and yet no invasion there either. So how can Obama prove that the internal affairs of Libya constitute a threat to international peace and security? When Libya was sending thousands of fighters to engage in warfare in Iraq, no such claim was made about posing a threat to international peace. Obama continues, these strikes will be limited in their nature, duration, and scope. Their purpose is to support an international coalition as it takes all the necessary measures to enforce the terms of UN Security Council Resolution 1973. However, the Allied response was a partial violation of its own UN resolution, which calls for a ban of all weapons in Libya. But the U.S. and Britain are supplying rebels with weapons. Here's the expansion clause. Quote, these limited U.S. actions will set the stage for further action by other coalition partners. Now, that's an open door to invasion and occupation. Even bigger than the Biden quote, for political expediency, was Obama's campaign statement, which directly contradicts what he is doing now. Fred Lucas of CNS News reports, as a presidential candidate, Senator Barack Obama emphatically stated the Constitution does not give the president the authority to unilaterally authorize a military attack unless it is needed to stop an actual or imminent attack on the United States. Obama made the assertion in a December 20, 2007 interview with the Boston Globe when reporter Charlie Savage asked him under what circumstances the president would have the constitutional authority to bomb Iran without first seeking authorization from Congress. Well, the president does not have power under the Constitution, he said, to unilaterally authorize a military attack in a situation that does not involve stopping an actual or imminent threat to the nation. Well, explain that away, Obama. In a harshly worded statement Monday evening, Representative Roscoe Bartlett, Republican of Maryland, said, quote, the United States does not have a king's army. President Obama's unilateral choice to use U.S. military force in Libya is an affront to our Constitution. But these two are hollow words without a bill of impeachment. But that won't ever come, especially with the weasel words of establishment senators like Dick Lugar, ranking Republican on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and a frequent ally of the president on foreign policy, who called for a, quote, full congressional debate on the objectives and cost in a declaration of war if it goes on. Hearings are always a means to a cover-up. We'll never see a declaration of war, especially when Gaddafi has not done a thing to attack the U.S. Finally, not a few anti-American leaders have called for Obama's peace prize to be revoked. It should never have been given, except that it served globalist political purposes. Well, let me stop at this point and inform my audience here, as Dr. Stan usually has me do, about how people can find out about my World Affairs Brief. It comes out every Friday, usually after this interview with Dr. Stan. It's showcased on my website, worldaffairsbrief.com, and people can get a free sample issue by emailing me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. Also on my website, you'll see links to, in fact, I would prefer people go, if they want to see links to my books, to go to www.joelskousen.com. That's JoelSkousen.com. And there you can find out all about the books that I've written about preparedness, the long-awaited third edition of Strategic Relocation is now out, and wow, it's just going out the door at almost 500 copies a day. It's number 200 on Amazon, so it's in high demand because it's such a rework of the older edition. Almost three-fourths of the text is new, all new color maps of all the states in the Union with a detailed analysis of every state, plus regional analysis of where the best regions are to find retreats. But more than that, it's a complete book on international retreating. It covers all of the best countries where one can find some temporary international safety, as well as strategies to avoid getting trapped overseas and how to get back to the United States. It also covers a lot about strategy, of how to work contingency planning, because most people, frankly, cannot move and leave the country or leave even the city. But they can maneuver within that population area to get into a safe place. I also take special care to show an example of how you map out a retreat route out of a major metro area, because people don't realize that freeways, for example, like great big viaducts and or moats around a river that you can only pass or get through in a few areas, and usually those will be jammed with people getting on or off the freeway or trying to. So I teach people how to seek overpasses or underpasses over the freeway and how to map those out in advance so that they can get past those barriers and out of town. Very, very important strategy. Other strategies involve how to round up a family in an emergency, which can be one of the biggest impediments towards getting out in a timely manner, even if you're living on the periphery of a high or major metropolitan area. One of my other books, The Secure Home, is my biggest book, over 700 pages, deals with how to build a retreat, how to design it, how to remodel a home for security and self-sufficiency. It's just a huge book, and it has all of the specific details about how to prepare residents with its strategies to survive more difficult times. And as I say, all of these books are available on my website, joelskousen.com, and you can get there as well by going to worldaffairsbrief.com. Well, in other news, Obama has been accused, and it's really certain that he is using a stolen Social Security number. And we'll talk about that on the other side of the break.
Carpet Magic in Greeley urges listeners, please support the hospitals in our area. Roll up your sleeve and donate blood. Keep in mind, the average shelf life of blood is only 42 days. There must be a steady flow of donations to meet the continuing needs of accident victims, surgery patients, and members of our armed forces. Give the gift of life. Give blood. This message from Carpet Magic in Greeley. Call 970-339-3599. Reminding everyone, life is the most precious gift you can give. So please, donate blood today. Now is the time to reserve your Passover tickets and join us for an awesome evening Monday, April the 18th at the Ramada Plaza, I-25 and 120th Avenue, as we celebrate the death, burial, and resurrection of Messiah Yeshua Jesus. Tickets are $30 for adults, $20 for 10 to 12-year-olds, $15 for 6 to 9-year-olds, and 5 and under are free. Deadline is Friday, April the 8th. No exceptions. Call 1-800-205-6245 for reservations, or mail your check to Beth Messiah Congregation, care of Sharon, P.O. Box 1750, Johnstown, Colorado, 80534. See you at Passover.
If cholesterol, high blood pressure, angina, atherosclerotic plaque, or stroke are a concern for you or your loved one, or you want to strengthen your heart, increase stamina, and promote overall cardiovascular health, then join the Heart Technology team. Heart Technology, Linus Pauling's recommended vitamin C therapies, is the answer to your concern. Don't wait until it's too late. For more information and to order, call Dennett Daniels at 1-800-205-6245. Heart Technology, it's natural, it's effective, it's inexpensive, and it's guaranteed. 1-800-205-6245.
If catastrophe struck, would your family be prepared? Are you confident you wouldn't react in a panic? Is there one place to get all of your emergency supplies? Ferris Survival encourages you to have confidence through preparation, not panic through crisis. Ferris Survival, located at 3366 South Broadway, is a professional, reputable, full-service business providing quality, realistic preparedness supplies at an affordable price. Go online, stop by, or call 303-781-0343. Ferris Survival.
And we're back again. This is Joel Skousen of World Affairs Brief, standing in for Dr. Stan. We're talking about Obama's use of a stolen Social Security number, and that's what illegal aliens do, and Obama is an illegal. Jack Cashill did a good job at WorldNet Daily putting together the latest conclusions about Obama's strange Social Security number from Connecticut, where he has never resided. He said, I found a no-nonsense licensed investigator from Ohio to do some checking on Obama's Social Security number. What Susan Daniels and fellow investigator Neil Sankey unearthed was a nugget that could have ended the career of a George Bush or a Sarah Palin. Barack Obama has been using a Social Security number issued in Connecticut between 1977 and 1979, a state in which he never lived or even visited at that time in his life. I asked Daniels to guide me through the data minefield and help me ascertain what we know for sure about the world's best-known Social Security number. All I can say, says Daniels, is that 042-684-425, that it's a phony, and Obama has been using it with it first appearing on a Selective Service document in 1980. Daniels sent me a copy of the handwritten application of the individual who held the number immediately before Obama. 042-684-424. That applicant, Thomas Woods, died at age 19, which is why this information is available. Woods' Social Security number was issued sometime between March and May of 77. Obama would turn 16 in August of that year. Wood lived on Glenwood Drive in Newington, Connecticut, the state from which all 042s applied. Obama lived in Hawaii at that time. True to form, the left-leaning media set out to undermine the Social Security controversy and ridicule the investigators. Revealing, however, is the weakness of the response. Numbers are assigned back on the based on the return address on the request envelope, not the residency. I mean, this is just bogus. Why would they look to the return address, which is often illegible, when an address of residence is required on the form, and that's what they use to create the Social Security number? Envelopes are discarded when opened. This claim was by Jason Lincolns of the Huffington Post. I mean, these are liberals just trying to make up any excuse to explain away how Obama could have got a 042 Social Security number. Another reason claimed is that Obama applied for a Social Security number as a little boy in Indonesia for no known reason, and the application just happened to be processed in Connecticut for no known reason either. Well, for the second reason, Lincoln cited the argument of Carol Gilbert in the Yahoo-related associated content. Said Gilbert, presumably with a straight face, in fact, Barack Obama's dad attended college in Connecticut, and in 1977, Obama was college age. Is it beyond reason to consider that he might have checked out his father's alma mater? Well, last time I checked, his father's alma mater was Harvard, and it was in Massachusetts, not Connecticut. The closest town to Harvard in Connecticut is about 90 miles away, and there's no record that Obama Sr. lived there, let alone that Obama visited his imaginary alma mater and just happened to apply for a Social Security card while visiting. The first use of the 042 number that Daniels could find was September 4, 1980, a month after his 19th birthday. She is not sure it is legitimate. I can guarantee that it isn't. Some have credibly argued that the Selective Service information was forged and backdated since Obama became a presidential candidate. Those were stupid to use the Connecticut number on the Selective Service card, Daniels said, because there's no way for Obama to back out of that number now, and it's embarrassing to him. But, of course, the press won't cover it. As to how Obama may have secured that number, it is possible that he turned to his radical friends for advice. Radical Bill Ayers, his former roommate and companion in the Weather Underground, said, we invented all kinds of ways to obtain false identity papers, and got busy building multiple sets of IDs for each of us for every contingency. We soon figured out that the deepest and most foolproof idea was based on Social Security card at its heart. Getting Social Security cards from dead people or young people was easy to do. For the record, Ayers appears to have commuted between his wife and children in Chicago and Columbia University in 1984 to 87. Obama left New York, where he too had attended Columbia, and arrived in Chicago in 1985. From Daniel's perspective, one felonious use of a fraudulent number is enough. She believes it to be a more tangible scandal than the birth certificate and wonders when someone beyond World Net Daily will start paying attention. And, of course, the answer to that is never, because this is a conspiracy to cover up the bringing in of an illegal alien. And I think the reason this happened was that when he was at Columbia, he was brought into the CIA where he worked. That's why no one ever remembers ever going to school with Barack Obama. He did have a roommate in the area, but that doesn't mean that he ever knew that when Barack Obama was leaving, whether he was going on assignment with the CIA or going to college. So this is the way that our government deals with these types of Manchurian candidates. In other news, the courts blocked New Mexico from denying licenses to illegals. Whenever states try to do something to stop allowing illegals access to benefits or driver's license, the courts intervene, as they did years back in California. New Mexico has a real problem with illegal aliens from Mexico. Over half the state is now Hispanic. I was listening to NPR this morning on the way to the office. They said between the 2000 census and 2010, Hispanic population grew 46% in the United States. That's almost half again as much. And that shows you how there has been no attempt by the Bush administration or the Obama administration to stop this wave of illegal immigration. Reuters reports that New Mexico's newly elected governor lost her attempt to deny driver's licenses to illegal immigrants on Saturday when the bill died in the state Senate. New Mexico is one of only three states to allow undocumented immigrants to receive driver's licenses. And when you do, that makes the state a magnet for illegal immigration. Governor Susana Martinez is a former prosecutor of Mexican-American descent, made a crackdown on illegal immigration a centerpiece of her campaign for her reelection. About 83,000 foreign nationals, including legal residents, hold driver's licenses in the state, and she called this practice of giving licenses to illegals dangerous. Of course, some law enforcement officials also opposed the repeal, arguing that it would lead to tens of thousands of motorists driving without licenses or insurance. Well, that's a poor excuse. It's a common excuse we hear all over, and it doesn't stop illegals from driving without insurance anyway. A very high percentage of accidents in the far West involve illegals without insurance, but who have a driver's license. So there's no guarantee that just giving them driver's license is going to guarantee that they have insurance, even if there is a requirement to show it when you start, because then they drop it. Well, it's been good to be with you. Next week, Dr. Stan will return. Thank you very much.
People of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America.
Sick of playing the guessing game with your vitamins? Tired of paying hundreds or even thousands of dollars for supplements that may or may not work? If you're a professional athlete or just looking for nutritional peace of mind, look no more, because you've found Bio Superfood, the next generation in supplementation. 100% natural Bio Superfood packs all your essential proteins, vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, enzymes, and many of nature's special forces you need for optimum health. Call BioAge at 877-288-9116, 877-288-9116.
Now is the time to reserve your Passover tickets and join us for an awesome evening Monday, April the 18th at the Ramada Plaza, I-25 and 120th Avenue as we celebrate the death, burial, and resurrection of Messiah Yeshua Jesus. Tickets are $30 for adults, $20 for 10 to 12-year-olds, $15 for 6 to 9-year-olds, and 5 and under are free. Deadline is Friday, April the 8th. No exceptions. Call 1-800-205-6245 for reservations or mail your check to Beth Messiah Congregation, care of Sharon, P.O. Box 1750, Johnstown, Colorado, 80534. See you at Passover. CINN stations in all salutes our troops. Whether you're for the war or against it, they're still there. These men and women deserve more than our support. They deserve the comfort of home. Send a military care package today. Just type military care package into a search engine. Point and click. Let's show our troops we care. This message from CINN stations in Ault, wishing Godspeed to our fighting men and women and thanking them for their triumphs and their sacrifices.
An emergency preparedness plan for your home, car, school, and office is a must. Knowing how to store water safely, survive extreme temperature changes, provide reliable shelter, first aid, and sanitation is critical. Knowing where to get the best lights, radios, and other supplies is easy. Ferris Survival, located at 3366 South Broadway, is a professional, reputable, full-service business providing realistic preparedness supplies at affordable prices. Stop by, go online, or call 303-781-0343, 866-781-0343.
If cholesterol, high blood pressure, angina, atherosclerotic plaque, or stroke are a concern for you or your loved one, or you want to strengthen your heart, increase stamina, and promote overall cardiovascular health, then join the Heart Technology team. Heart Technology, Linus Pauling's recommended vitamin C.